up things. Are you going to be happy with Mr. Waldenstein?
Yes, very.
Don't forget that little bag over there. And old Gully went through the door. Is it fun being married? Harriet continued as they went down the steps. How should I know? I've never been married. However, I doubt if it's all fun. Nothing ever is, you know.
Well, are you going to have a lot of children?
And love them better than you?
No, never.
I'm probably going to work a little more until he gets a little more money, so I'll be a nurse to someone.
But there's only one Harriet. Remember that.
And old Golly opened the front door.
Well, well, said Harriet helplessly.
You better get to work. You've missed a whole afternoon with your notebook. Old Golly was looking up and down the street for a cab. She seemed to be in a hurry.
Harriet threw herself up on old Golly's neck and, putting both arms around, hugged with all her might.
Goodbye, Harriet the Spy, whispered old Golly into Harriet's neck. Harriet felt tears start in her eyes. Old Golly put her down sternly.
None of that. Tears won't bring me back. Remember that. Tears never bring anything back. Life is a struggle, and a good spy gets in there and fights. Remember that. No nonsense.
And with that, she picked up her bags and was down the steps. A cab pulled up, and old Golly was gone before Harriet could say a word. She thought, though, as she remembered old Golly leaning down toward the bags, that she had seen one tear fall. That night, as she got ready for bed alone, after having taken her bath alone, she wrote in her notebook, I feel all the same things when I do things alone as when old Golly was here. The bath feels hot, the bed feels soft, but I feel there's a funny little hole in me that wasn't there before, like a splinter in your finger. But this is somewhere above my stomach. She turned out the light and went immediately to sleep, without even reading. Book 2, Chapter 7. The next afternoon, Harriet didn't get home until 5 o'clock. She had purposely stayed away all day, first following her spy route, then playing Monopoly with Janie and Sport. The game had made her irritable, because she hated to sit still for that long. Janie and Sport loved it. Janie had all sorts of systems worked out for winning, and Sport was so passionate about money that they were kept continually interested, but Harriet couldn't keep her mind on it. When she got to the top of the steps, she stood still a minute, quietly. The house was completely silent. Her mother was out, and her father wasn't home from work yet. The kitchen was so far away she couldn't hear the cook. She stood very still, listening. It hadn't been this way when old Golly lived there. That was one thing about old Golly, thought Harriet. Even if she didn't say anything, you were aware of her. She made herself felt in the house. Harriet looked toward old Golly's room. It stood vacant, silent, its yellow door open. Harriet walked toward it. Standing on the threshold, she looked into the neat emptiness. It had been almost this neat when old Golly was in it, but there had been flowers. Old Golly had always managed to have a sprig of something alive in the room. There had been the big flowered quilt, too, that Harriet bounced in. Old Golly took the quilt, Harriet thought to herself. She turned and ran into her room. For a minute, she thought she would cry. Then she went into her little bathroom and washed her face. She thought to herself that there was no good in crying. Old Golly wasn't coming back. Crying wouldn't bring her back. She sat down to read. How I love to read, she thought. The whole world gets bigger. Just the way old Golly said it was when Mr. Waldenstein proposed. She felt a twinge in her stomach.
Phooey on Mr. Waldenstein, she thought. Why did he take her away? Am I going to cry anyway? The front door slammed with a bang, and Harriet knew her father was home. He always came home with a bang, the same way Harriet did. She rushed out now, banging the door to her room behind her, and thumped down the steps, jumping on each one as hard as she could, then running until she ran smack into her father. "Hey there!" He stood there laughing and tall, his horn-rimmed glasses fallen over to one side from the force of the impact. He grabbed her and swung her up into the air. "Hey, you're getting too much for your old man!" Harriet scrambled down, laughing, and he set her on her feet. "How much do you weigh now?"
75.
"Fat lady, you tell him, fat lady."
He was putting down his briefcase and taking off his jacket.
"Where's your mother?"
"Bridge," Harriet said in a disgusted way. "Bridge, what a bore. How can she play that fink game so much, and those finks she plays with?" He muttered away to himself.
Harriet loved to hear him jabber on like this. She knew he wasn't talking to her, so it was fun to listen.
"What you do today, Daddy?"
"Finked around with a lot of pictures."
"Got any movie star pictures for me?"
"Harriet M. Welsh, I have no movie star pictures for you today. If I have one good thing to thank the Lord for today, it is that I did not have to gaze upon the jowls of an aging movie star. Anyway, those finks have given me such a low budget, I doubt that I'll ever see another movie star."
Today was Monday, Harriet suddenly remembered. Old Golly had once said to her, "Don't mess with anybody on a Monday. It's a bad, bad day." Mr. Welsh wandered into the library, newspaper in hand.
"How about a little quiet now, Harriet?"
"Who's saying anything?" She was, after all, just standing there.
"I have the distinct feeling that I can hear you thinking. Now run along until Mommy comes back."
"Uh-oh," thought Harriet. "This is a very bad Monday indeed." He walked over to the bar and began to mix a martini. Harriet tiptoed away. She suddenly remembered that she had a little homework to do, so she went back up to her room. She thought that she had better do it before her favorite program came on at 7:30. Her favorite program was the early movie. She didn't like any of the kids' programs. She never seemed to understand the point of them. They seemed so dumb. Janie looked at all of them and laughed her head off, but they left Harriet cold. Janie also naturally watched all the science ones, taking notes the whole time. Sport watched the sports news and the cooking programs, taking down recipes that might make his father eat. Harriet sat down at her desk and pulled out her school notebook. There was an assignment she had to do for math. She hated math. She hated math with every bone in her body. She spent so much time hating it that she never had time to do it. She didn't understand it at all, not a word. She didn't even understand anyone who did understand it. She always looked at them suspiciously. Did they have some part of the brain that she didn't have? Was there a big hole missing in her head where all the math should be? She took out her own notebook and wrote, "Either we each have a brain and they all look alike, or we each have a special brain that looks like the inside of each of our heads. I wonder if the inside looks like the outside. I wonder if some brains, for instance, in people who have longer noses, I wonder if those people have a longer nose part to the brain. I have a very short nose. Maybe that's where the math should be." She slammed her notebook and tried to get back to the math. The numbers swam in front of her. She looked over at a large picture of Old Golly, in which teeth figured prominently. She looked up as her mother came to the door. "How are you, darling? Are you working?"
"No, studying."
"What are you studying?"
"Math." Harriet made a terrible face. Mrs. Welsh came into the room and leaned over Harriet's chair.
"What fun, darling! That was always my favorite subject in school."
"Well, there you are," thought Harriet. "Old Golly wouldn't have said that. Old Golly always said, 'Math is for them that only want to count everything. It's them that wants to know what they're counting that matter.'" And that was it, all right. If only those little marks meant something besides just funny little marks on a piece of paper.
"Why, here, baby, this is simple. Let me show you."
Harriet squirmed. They could show and show and show and show, but it would never make a bit of difference. Mrs. Welsh pulled a chair over and sat down happily. She soon became absorbed in the problem before her and forgot Harriet altogether. Harriet watched her working. When she was sure her mother was absorbed, she took out her own notebook and began to write. "My mother has brown eyes and brown hair. Her hands wiggle around a lot. She frowns when she looks at things close. My daddy has brown eyes too, but he has black hair. I didn't know she liked math. If I had ever known she liked math, I would have felt very funny. I just can't stand math." Harriet's mother looked up with a smile. "There," she said triumphantly. "Do you understand that now?" Harriet nodded. Better that way. Maybe she wouldn't go into it.
"Well, wash your hands then, and come down to supper."
"Can I eat with you?"
"Yes, darling, we're having an early supper tonight. Harry's beat, and I've just about had it."
"Had what?"
"Had it. Had it. It's an expression.
It just means tired." She went down the steps. Harriet wrote in her notebook, "Had it. Think about that." That night, when she went to bed, she read half the night because no one thought to take the flashlight away as Old Golly had always done. "They'd let me read all night," she thought finally. And when she put out the flashlight, closed the book, and put them on the night table, she felt sad and lost.
Harriet awoke the next morning with the feeling that she had been dreaming about Old Golly all night. She picked up her notebook without even getting out of bed.
"I wonder if when you dream about somebody, they dream about you." She lay there a moment, thinking about that.
Then she suddenly remembered that today was the day for parts to be chosen for the Christmas pageant. She wanted to be on time, because otherwise she would get a rotten part. Last year she had been late and had ended up being one of the sheep. Even though she hurried, she still went through the same routine she went through every morning. She loved routines so much that Old Golly had always had to watch her to see that she didn't put on the same clothes as the day before. They always seemed to Harriet to fit better after she had worn them for a while. As soon as she was dressed, she bounced down the steps into the dining room, where her mother sent her back upstairs immediately to wash her face.
How could she remember all these things, she wondered. Old Golly always remembered everything. After breakfast, she took a few cursory notes. Comments on the weather, the cook, her father's choice of tie, etc. Then got her books and walked to school. She took a few more notes as she watched people pouring into the school. Everyone always sidled up to her and asked, "What are you writing in that notebook?" Harriet would just smile slyly. It drove them crazy. Harriet always did her work swiftly and in a very routine way, signing everything Harriet M. Welsh with a big flourish. She loved to write her name. She loved to write anything, for that matter. Today she was about to write her name at the top of the page when she remembered again that today was the day for discussion on the Christmas pageant. Miss Elson came into the room, and they all stood up and said, "Good morning, Miss Elson." Miss Elson bowed and said, "Good morning, children." Then they all sat down and punched each other. Sport threw Harriet a note which said, "I hear there's a dance about pirates. Let's try and get that one. That is, if we have to do it."
Harriet wrote back a note which said, "We have to do it. They throw you out otherwise." Sport wrote back, "I have no Christmas spirit." Harriet wrote back, "We'll have to fake it." Miss Elson stood in the middle of the room and called for order. No one paid the slightest bit of attention, so she hit the blackboard with the eraser, which sent up a cloud of smoke, making her sneeze and everyone else laugh. Then she grew very stern and stared a long time at a spot somewhere down the middle aisle. That always worked.
"Now, children," she began when there was silence, "today is the day to plan our Christmas pageant. First, let's have some ideas from the floor about what we would like to do. I don't think I need bother explaining what this day means to us. There is only one new child here who might wonder."
The boy with the purple socks looked horribly embarrassed.
"And I think I can simplify this by saying that at the Christmas pageant, we get a chance to show the parents what we have been learning. Now, each one hold up your hand when you have a suggestion."
Sport's arms shot up.
"What about pirates?"
"Well, that's a thought. I'll write that down, Simon. But I think I heard something about the fourth grade being pirates. Next."
Marion Hawthorne stood up. Harriet and Sport looked at each other with pained expressions. Marion said,
"I think, Miss Elson, that we should do a spectacular of the Trojan War. That would show everyone exactly what we have been learning."
She sat down again. Miss Elson smiled.
"That's a lovely idea, Marion. I shall certainly write that down."
Harriet, Sport, and Janie groaned loudly. Janie stood up.
"Miss Elson, don't you think there will be certain difficulties about building a Trojan horse, much less getting us all in there?"
"Well, I don't think we'll go that far in realism, Janie. This is still open for discussion anyway, so let's hear the other ideas before we discuss the details. I don't know how big a spectacular we could have in the time allotted us. Anyway, I think I should remind you that we are not supposed to give a play. The sixth grade is supposed to dance. We are due in the gymnasium in 30 minutes to discuss this dance with Miss Barry, the dance teacher, then be measured for costumes by Miss Dodge. Now, you know that once the subject is chosen, you all improvise your dances, but this year you will be allowed to choose your subject, whereas always before, Miss Barry has chosen it."
"Soldiers!" screamed Sport.
"Now, not out of turn, Simon. I'll go down the line, and each one gets a chance."
Miss Elson then called the roll.
"Andrews," she said,
and Carrie got up and said that she thought it would be nice to have a dance about Dr. Kildare and Ben Casey. Miss Elson wrote it down. There was a great deal of whispering around the room as people started trying to get their gang to agree on something.
"Gibbs?"
"I think that a dance about the Curies discovering radium would be nice. We could all be particles, except me and Sport, and we could be Monsieur and Madame Curie."
"Hansen?"
Beth Ellen shot a terrified glance at Marion Hawthorne, who had been sending her a barrage of notes. Finally, she said softly,
"I think we should all be things you eat at Christmas dinner."
"Hawthorne?"
Marion stood up.
"I think that's an excellent suggestion on Beth Ellen Hansen's part."
"I think we should be Christmas dinner, too."
"Hennessy?"
Rachel stood up.
"I agree with Marion and Beth Ellen. I think that's a good idea."
"Peters?"
Laura Peters was terribly shy, so shy that she smiled at everybody all the time, as though they were about to hit her.
I think that's a good idea, too,"
she quavered and sank gratefully back into her seat.
"Matthews?"
The boy with the purple socks stood up and said in an offhand way, "Why not? I'd just as soon be a Christmas dinner as anything else."
"Rock?"
Simon looked at Harriet. She knew what that look meant. She was becoming aware of the same thing. They were surrounded. They should have gotten together, and now it was too late. In a minute, they would all be assigned to things like giblet gravy. Simon stood up.
I don't know why we don't do the Trojan War like Marian Hawthorne said first. I would a whole lot rather be a soldier than some carrots and peas.
Very clever, thought Harriet. Maybe Marian would consent to her own idea.
How bright sport is, she thought.
Welsh?
I think sport's absolutely right, and sat down, intercepting a glare from Marian Hawthorne as she did so.
Uh-oh, thought Harriet, she's on to us.
Whitehead?
Pinky's was the only name left. Sport threw a pencil right in his face. At first, Harriet couldn't see why. Then she saw Pinky look at Sport, then stand up and say sadly,
I agree with Harriet and Simon.
Well, thought Harriet, that's three against the world. Too bad Janie had to be in such a hurry about the Curies. There was a vote, but they knew they had lost even before it happened.
Miss Elson said, I think that's a lovely idea. Now we can have a little discussion with Miss Barry about which parts of the dinner we will take, and then you can start making up your dances at home. Now let's go to the gym.
Everyone but Marian Hawthorne and Rachel Hennessy looked terribly disgruntled. They all got up and filed after Miss Elson out of the classroom, down the stairs, into the courtyard, through the courtyard with the little patch of green called the back lawn, and into the gymnasium, where a scene of utter pandemonium greeted them. It was obvious that everyone in the school was in the gym. There were all sizes and shapes of girls, from little ones to older ones just about to graduate. Miss Barry was screeching frantically, and Miss Dodge was measuring so fast she looked as though she might fly right out the window. Hairpins were falling out, and her glasses were askew as she whipped through waist after waist, hip after hip. Miss Barry's leotards looked baggy. Sport looked around wildly.
I've never been so terrified in my life. Look at all these girls!
He began to edge his way toward Pinky Whitehead and the boy with the purple socks. Harriet grabbed him by the collar.
You stay right here. Suppose something happens and we have to have partners.
She pushed her face close to his. He began to sweat nervously, but stayed next to her after that.
Now, children, sixth grade, over here, please.
Miss Elson was gesturing frantically. Marian Hawthorne looked around pompously at everyone who didn't move instantly. She always seemed to be laboring under the impression that she was Miss Elson's understudy.
Come along there, Harriet,
she said imperiously. Harriet had a sudden vision of Marian grown up and decided she wouldn't look a bit different, just taller and more pinched.
Boy, does she tee me off, said Sport,
digging his hands in his pockets and his sneakers against the floor as though he would never move.
Simon!
Miss Elson spoke quite sharply, and Sport jumped a mile.
Simon, Harriet, Jane, come along now!
They moved.
Now we'll stand here and wait our turn with Miss Barry, and I don't want any talking. The din in this place is unbearable!
Isn't it awful?
Said Marian Hawthorne in a falsetto. Harriet thought, Marian Hawthorne is going to grow up and play bridge a lot. Pinky Whitehead looked as though he might faint. He ran to Miss Elson frantically and whispered something in her ear. She looked down at him.
Oh, Pinky, can't you wait?
No, said Pinky loudly.
But it's so far.
Pinky shook his head again, was dismissed by Miss Elson, and ran out. Sport laughed. There weren't any bathrooms for boys in the gym. Thought he'd never leave, said Janie. She had gotten this from her mother. Harriet looked at Beth Ellen staring into space. Harriet was under the impression that Beth Ellen had a mother in an insane asylum, because Mrs. Welsh had once said,
That poor child, her mother is always at Biarritz.
All right, children, Miss Barry is ready now.
They marched over with flat feet like prisoners. Harriet felt like Sergeant York.
Miss Barry was in her usual state of hysteria. Her hair was pulled into a wispy ponytail, as though it were pulling her eyes back. She looked at them wildly.
Sixth grade. Yes, sixth grade. Let's see. What have you decided? Well, what have you decided?
Marion Hawthorne spoke for them, naturally.
We've decided to be a whole Christmas dinner, she said brightly.
Lovely, lovely. Now, let's see. Vegetables first, vegetables.
Sports started to sprint for the door. Miss Elson pulled him back by the ear. Pinky Whitehead arrived back. Miss Barry turned to him, enchanted.
You will make a wonderful stalk of celery.
What? Said Pinky stupidly.
And you, she pointed to Harriet, are an onion.
This was too much.
I refuse. I absolutely refuse to be an onion.
She stood her ground. She could hear Sport whispering his support behind her. Her ears began to burn as they all turned and looked at her. It was the first time she had ever really refused to do anything.
Oh, dear.
Miss Barry looked as though she might run out the door.
Harriet, that's ridiculous. An onion is a beautiful thing. Have you ever really looked at an onion?
Miss Elson was losing all touch with reality.
I will not do it. Harriet, that's enough. We won't have any more of this impudence. You are an onion.
I am not.
Harriet, that is quite enough. I won't do it. I quit.
Sport was pulling at her sleeve. He whispered frantically,
You can't quit. This is a school.
But it was too late. A roar of laughter went up from the group. Even that mild thing, Beth Ellen, was laughing her head off. Harriet felt her face turning red. Miss Barry seemed to come back to life.
Now, children, I think it would be nice to take each thing from its inception to the time it arrives on the table. We must have some more vegetables. You there, she pointed to Janie. Your squash. And you, she pointed to Beth Ellen, are a pea.
Beth Ellen looked as though tears were close.
You two,
she pointed to Marion Hawthorne and Rachel Hennessy,
can be the gravy.
At this, Harriet, Sport, and Janie broke into hysterical peals of laughter and had to be quieted by Miss Elson before Miss Barry could continue.
I don't see what's funny. We have to have gravy.
You, she pointed to Sport,
and you,
she pointed to Pinky Whitehead,
are the turkey.
Well, of all the...
began Sport, and was shushed by Miss Elson.
After she had made the boy with the purple socks into a bowl of cranberries, she turned to the class.
Now, all the vegetables, listen to me, said Miss Barry, planting her feet firmly in the fifth position.
Harriet made a mental note to make a note of the fact that Miss Barry always wore, even on the street, those flat mouse-gray practice shoes. They were always terribly old ones, with the crossbar curling away from the arch.
I want you to feel, to the very best of your endeavor, I want you to feel that one morning you woke up as one of these vegetables, one of these dear vegetables nestling in the earth, warm in the heat and power and magic of growth, or striving tall above the ground, pushing through bit by bit in the miracle of birth, waiting for that glorious moment when you will be
eaten, Harriet whispered to Sport.
Once and for all, your essential and beautiful self, full-grown, radiant.
Miss Barry's eyes were beginning to glaze. One arm was outstretched toward the skylight. Half of her hair had fallen over one ear. She held the pose in silence. Miss Elson coughed. It was a things-are-getting-altogether-out-of-hand cough. Miss Barry jumped. She looked as though she had just come up out of a subway and didn't know east from west.
She gave an embarrassed titter, then started afresh.
We'll start with the tenderest moment of these little vegetables. For, you know, children, this dance has a story, a lovely story.
She trilled a bit of laughter to let them know she was still there.
It starts, as do all stories, with the moment of conception.
She looked around in a delighted way. Miss Elson turned pale.
It starts, naturally, with the farmer.
Hey, I want to be the farmer, Sport yelled.
Do not say hey to a teacher.
Miss Elson was losing patience.
Oh, but, dear boy, one of the older girls will be the farmer. A farmer must be taller, after all, than vegetables. Vegetables are very short.
She looked annoyed that he didn't know this. Sport turned away in disgust.
Well, the farmer comes in on this lovely morning when the ground is freshly broken, open, and yielding, waiting to receive. When he enters, you will all be piled in a corner like seed waiting to be planted. You will just lie there in lumps like this.
And she fell abruptly to the ground. She lay there like a heap of old clothes.
Come on, let's split. She's gone.
Sport turned to go.
Miss Berry, I think they've got the position, said Miss Elson loudly.
Miss Berry turned one inquiring eye over her shoulder to face a royal snub from Miss Elson. She scrambled to her feet.
All right, children, she was suddenly crisp. I want you to start improvising your dances, and I will see what you've done next dance class.
The change in her was so remarkable that the children all stared in silence.
Please file over there and be fitted.
She turned her head back. It was all so swift that Miss Elson stood gaping a minute before she started to herd them toward the costume corner. They all looked back curiously at Miss Berry, who stood, feet planted flatly, her misunderstood nose high in the air.
The costume corner looked like Macy's on sale day. Quantities of tulle flew through the air.
Sport wilted.
Boy, this is a scene I really can't make.
It was dreary. Harriet remembered it from last year as a long wait with your feet hurting while a terribly flustered Miss Dodge measured you in a sweaty way and likely as not stuck you full of pins. One day, said Janie, I am going to come in here with a vial and blow this place sky high. The three of them stood glumly, staring at the tulle. How do you practice being an onion? Harriet looked over at Miss Berry, who was falling into another pile of rags on the floor. Evidently, all the dances were the same. Sport got an evil look.
I think I'll scream as loud as I can when she measures me.
Janie's turn came.
Here goes nothing, she said loudly.
Miss Dodge blinked her giant eyes behind her glasses, fluttered her tape measure, and dropped several pins from her mouth.
Chapter 8. When Harriet started her spy route the next day, she decided to visit the Robinsons first, because the day before she had seen an immense crate delivered to their house, and she couldn't wait to see what was in it. The Robinsons were always moody right before they bought something, and this time they had been moody for a week, so she figured this must have been a whopper of a purchase. She sneaked up to the window. There was the crate. It sat squarely in the middle of the living room. How did they get it in, she thought. And then she saw that it would go through the door with just about an inch to spare all around.
Mrs. Robinson was running around it in ecstasy. Mr. Robinson was hopping up and down on one foot.
A railway express man was starting to unpack the crate.
A crowning achievement, said Mr. Robinson.
A joy, such a joy, said Mrs. Robinson, completing a circle. Wait till... Just think what they'll... They were so excited they didn't bother to make sentences. The railway express man ignored them. He worked steadily and noisily until the front section was ready to be pulled away. Harriet held her breath. The front panel came away, exposing nothing but sawdust. Well, thought Harriet, that does it. But then the sawdust was being pulled frantically away by Mr. and Mrs. Robinson, who had leaped forward in their eagerness, pushing aside the railway express man.
There! There!
Screamed Mrs. Robinson. And there, indeed, was the strangest thing Harriet had ever seen. It was an enormous, but enormous, perhaps 6 feet high, wooden sculpture of a fat, petulant, rather unattractive baby. The baby wore a baby cap, huge white dress, and baby booties. The head was completely round and carved out of butcher's block, so that it resembled a beautifully grained newel post with a face carved in it. The baby sat on its diapered bottom, feet straight out ahead, and fat arms curving into fatter hands, which held, surprisingly, a tiny mother. Harriet stared. Mrs. Robinson exclaimed with her hand to her heart, "She is a genius!" This was too much even for the railway express man, who could contain himself no longer and said,
"Who?"
rather rudely.
"Why, the sculptor! She is marvelous! She is brilliant! She is a white star in the firmament!"
"Yeah? A dame made that?" He gaped.
"If you've finished..."
Mr. Robinson looked pompous.
"Oh, yeah, yeah. I just have to carry out the junk. Where do you want her?"
"It."
"Darling, I still think the corner behind the entrance, so that it isn't seen immediately, you know. And then it will dominate the room from the couch."
"It'll do that, all right," said the railway express man, picking up excelsior in handfuls and stuffing it into the crate.
"Just be kind enough to remove this without comment," said Mr. Robinson huffily. The baby was rolled into a corner and the crate removed by the grinning workman. Harriet left Mr. and Mrs. Robinson holding hands and gazing at it in speechless joy. She went to the street and wrote in her book, "Olgali is right. There's as many ways to live as people," she says. "But wait till she hears about this 1,000-pound baby." "Oh, I forgot." She paused and looked into space. "When somebody goes away, there's things you want to tell them. When somebody dies, maybe that's the worst thing. You want to tell them things that happen after. Olgali isn't dead." She slammed the book shut, feeling something akin to rage. Then she got up and headed over to the DeSanti family. Nothing much was happening in the front of the store, so she crept around to the back to watch little Joe Curry. He was in full command of an array of food that would have fed the Marines for a week. He munched happily. Harriet was wondering if the kids had been there yet, when suddenly the phone rang inside the store. Little Joe looked guilty and started to hide things just in case, when there was a blood-curdling scream from the front of the store. Little Joe was so startled a piece of bread fell right out of his mouth. Harriet dashed around to the front. Mrs. DeSanti was being held by Bruno in a half-faint, through which she managed to scream as loud as a dying opera singer.
"Ecco, ecco, ecco, he's killed! All is lost! Dio, Dio!"
"No, mamma, just an accident," Bruno began, looking helplessly to Papa DeSanti, who was hanging up the phone.
Dead kill truck smashed to bits. Eccola, Dio, Dio, mio figlio!
And she swooned. Bruno looked as though he might drop the considerable weight, so Papa De Santi rushed to help him. As he did so, he said,
Mamma, mamma, the truck is not smashed. Fabio is not smashed. Nothing is smashed but his head when he gets here. A fender, that's all it was, a fender.
Signora De Santi revived immediately and started to run up and down the store, waving her arms wildly and screaming in Italian. The customers stood around like frozen food. She ran up and down, finally gathering so much momentum that she crashed on into the storeroom, there discovering little Joe with a whole cucumber in his mouth.
Ecco, and not bad enough, stealing us blind!
And gathering up all the food in one arm and little Joe by the ear, she came catapulting back into the store. The family stared open-mouthed. The customers came alive and started to edge toward the door, feeling that this was perhaps too much.
Mamma, mamma, ti calma!
Papa De Santi, seeing the evidence of little Joe's treachery, began to scream himself a long string of frightening-sounding words.
But Papa!
Bruno screamed to be heard.
Where is Fabio? Is he hurt? Is he in the hospital? Him, he is fine, evidentemente. What would happen to him? It's the truck is smashed.
Papa De Santi managed to get this out, then went back to screaming at little Joe.
Fired, you're fired, we not running a restaurant.
Suddenly the door tinkled, then slammed, and there was utter silence as they all turned to see Fabio standing there. He had a minuscule patch of plaster on his forehead.
My son!
Screamed Mama De Santi and rushed toward him.
You're hurt! He's hurt, Papa! Look at him! He's hurt!
And she flung herself at him with such force that Fabio was hurled back against the door.
It's nothing, nothing, Mamma, he said, smiling.
She straightened up, looked at him hard for 1 minute, then slapped him across the head.
Your father work with his bare hands for that truck. Work hard, not like you. Work hard, understand?
The family watched this in awe, as did Harriet. Fabio turned red, and tears sprang to his eyes.
Mamma, he began. Don't mamma me. You no son of mine. No son of mine.
She raised one finger aloft to the ceiling. From this day forward.
Mamma, Papa De Santi interrupted. Don't yet. Let's see what the boy has to say.
Harriet felt wildly curious. Fabio shot a grateful glance at his father. He looked terribly embarrassed. He fidgeted in his pockets until he found an old bent cigarette, which he put in his mouth. It hung there, broken. Maybe, thought Harriet, he can't talk without that. The whole family was looking at him. He bent his head apologetically, then began in a low voice.
I didn't want to tell you till later. Papa...
He looked up at his father in a very sad way.
I can't help it. I just don't want to be in the grocery business. It's not your fault. It's just... to be stuck in a store all day. It's not for me. So I...
He took a deep breath.
I took another job.
You what?
Papa and Mama De Santi said in one breath.
I took another job. Only the only thing is, you need a car for this job. I'm a salesman.
He looked frightened, Harriet thought.
Well, well, well.
Papa De Santi looked totally amazed. Then an enormous broad grin spread over his face.
Son, you're working?
Mama De Santi looked as though she might faint again.
Yes, Mama.
And looking at his father, he laughed.
I'm working.
Santa Maria.
Mama De Santi fainted. Bruno caught her. Papa De Santi uttered all sorts of exclamations and slapped Fabio rather hard, Harriet thought, on the back. The others gathered round, with the exception of little Joe, who took this opportunity to filch a piece of gorgonzola. Harriet tiptoed to the street and there sat down to write in her book.
My, my, better than a movie. It's such a happy ending, I don't believe it for one minute. I bet that Fabio is up to no good, as usual.
Wait, he didn't say what he was a salesman for. I wonder what he's selling. I must come back tomorrow to see what happens to little Joe Curry. Harriet went over to Harrison Withers. She looked through the skylight. Harrison Withers sat at his work table, but he wasn't working. He was looking out the window. His face was the saddest face Harriet had ever seen. She stared at him a long time, but he didn't move a muscle. She went across to the other skylight. There she saw such a strange sight that she almost keeled over. What she saw was an empty room, not a cat in sight. She ran back to Harrison Withers to see if she had perhaps missed seeing the cats. No, nor were they in the kitchen. She sat back on her heels. They got him, she thought. They finally got him. She leaned over once more to look at his face. She looked a long time. Then she sat down and wrote in her book. I will never forget that face as long as I live. Does everybody look that way when they have lost something? I don't mean like losing a flashlight. I mean, do people look like that when they have lost?
Chapter 9. Harriet felt so grumpy she knocked off work for the day. That night after supper, she tried to practice being an onion. She started by falling down several times, making a great bumping noise each time. The idea was to fall in a rolling way, the way an onion would, and then roll around in a complete circle several times, then roll slowly to a stop, the way an onion would if you put it down on a table. Harriet rolled around and bumped into a chair, knocking it over. Her mother came to the door. She looked down at Harriet lying there with the chair on top of her.
"What are you doing?" she asked mildly.
"Being an onion." Her mother picked the chair up off Harriet's chest. Harriet didn't move. She was tired.
"What in the world is all that noise I hear in here?"
"I told you I'm being an onion."
"It's a pretty noisy onion."
"I can't help it. I can't do it right yet. Miss Barry says when I do it right, I won't make a sound."
"Oh, it's for the Christmas pageant. Is that it?"
"Well, you don't think I'd just be an onion all on my own, do you?"
"None of your lip there, girl. Get up and let me see what you have to do."
Harriet got up and fell over, then rolled and rolled around until suddenly she rolled right under the bed. She came out full of dust mice. Mrs. Welsh looked horrified.
"That terrible maid, I'm going to fire her tomorrow."
She looked at Harriet, who stood ready to fall again.
"That's the clumsiest dance I ever saw. Miss Barry assigned this?"
"Miss Barry assigned the onion part. I'm making up the dance," Harriet said pointedly.
"Oh," said Mrs. Welsh discreetly.
Harriet fell over again, this time rolling away almost into the bathroom. Mr. Welsh came into the room. "What's going on in here? It sounds like someone hitting a punching bag."
"She's being an onion."
They stood watching Harriet fall over and over again. Mr. Welsh put his pipe in his mouth and crossed his arms. According to Stanislavski, you have to feel like an onion. Do you feel like an onion?
Not in the least, said Harriet.
Oh, come on, what are they teaching you in school these days?
Mrs. Welsh started to laugh.
No, I'm serious. There's a whole school downtown that's probably rolling all over the floor right this minute.
I never wanted to be an onion, Harriet said from the floor.
And it's a good thing. How many parts do you think are written for onions these days? Mr. Welsh laughed. I don't imagine you did want to be an onion. For that matter, who knows if an onion does either?
Mrs. Welsh laughed up at him. You're so smart. Let's see you fall like an onion.
Don't mind if I do, said Mr. Welsh, and putting down his pipe, he fell solidly to the floor.
The floor shook.
Honey, did you hurt yourself?
Mr. Welsh just lay there flat. No, he said quietly, but it's not as easy as it looks. He lay there breathing.
Harriet took another fall just to keep him company.
Why don't you get up, honey?
Mrs. Welsh stood over him with a worried look on her face.
I'm trying to feel like an onion. The closest I can get is a scallion.
Harriet tried to feel like an onion. She found herself screwing her eyes up tight, wrapping her arms around her body, then buckling her knees and rolling to the ground.
My God, Harriet, are you sick?
Mrs. Welsh rushed over to her. Harriet rolled round and round the room. It wasn't bad at all, this being an onion. She bumped into her father, who started to laugh. She couldn't keep her face screwed up and laughed at him. Her father started being an onion in earnest, rolling and rolling. Harriet suddenly jumped up and started to write in her notebook.
I wonder what it would be like to be a table, or a chair, or a bathtub, or another person. I wonder what old Golly would say to that. Old Golly looked like a bird with teeth, but I think I really look a little like an onion. I wish she would come back.
Harriet was so absorbed in her writing that she had forgotten her parents were in the room. When she finally slammed her book and looked up, they were staring at her in the strangest way.
What were you doing, dear?
Asked Mrs. Welsh in an ever so casual way.
Writing in my notebook.
Harriet began to feel nervous. They were looking at her in such a strange way.
Oh, can we see?
No!
Harriet almost screamed, then said more quietly,
Of course not. It's secrets.
Oh, said her father, and looked rather hurt.
What is the matter with them, Harriet thought. They both just kept looking at her. Is it something for school, dear? Asked Mrs. Welsh.
No, said Harriet, and felt even more nervous. Why didn't they stop looking at her?
I'm sort of tired, honey. I think I'll go to bed, Mrs. Welsh said to her husband.
Yeah, me too,
he said, taking up his pipe.
Why are they acting like that, thought Harriet.
You'd think I was doing something very funny.
Old Golly never acted like that. Her parents kissed her goodnight in a rather melancholy way and went out. She reached for her notebook and was starting to write when she heard her father say sotto voce on the steps.
Yes, it makes me feel I don't even know my own child.
And Mrs. Welsh answered, We must try to know her better now that Miss Golly is gone. Harriet felt puzzled. She wrote,
Why don't they say what they feel?
Old Golly said, Always say exactly what you feel. People are hurt more by misunderstanding than anything else.
Am I hurt? I don't feel hurt. I just feel funny all over.
And by the time she went to sleep, she felt even funnier. The next day, she felt very grumpy again on the way to school.
Sport and Janie came running up to her as she was going in and told her that they planned to practice their dances that afternoon and did she want to practice with them at Janie's house. She said yes in such a grumpy way, they stared at her. Then, when she breathed in a very labored way and said, "Don't mind me," they really stared. She went on into school, calling back over her shoulder, "I'll be there after my spy route." They just looked at her. That afternoon, she decided to try Mrs. Plummer again, even though she knew it was terribly risky. She waited for the maid to leave the kitchen, then darted into the dumbwaiter, her heart pounding so hard she was sure it could be heard. She pulled the ropes gingerly. They worked smoothly at first, but just as she reached the parlor floor, there was a terribly loud creak. She sat there, horrified, not daring to breathe. Then she heard voices.
"Impossible! Impossible!"
Mrs. Plummer's voice came out of a pile of pillows in a whisper filled with horror.
"Nadine!" Mrs. Plummer screamed to the maid. "Nadine!"
A chilling scream fading at the end.
"Yes, ma'am."
Harriet could see the maid standing primly to one side of the bed. Mrs. Plummer raised up, looking like a bloated eagle.
"Nadine, it can't be! It can't be!"
And flopped back down, disappearing into pink pillows.
"Doctor's orders, ma'am."
From the pillows.
"Confined to bed,"
and the tiny voice was lost for a minute,
"for the rest of my life."
And a wail arose. Well, thought Harriet, feeling agitated and strangely in sympathy with Mrs. Plummer, she did want to be there. She moved a little to write in her book. "Is old Golly right? Is it terrible to get what you want? I want to be a writer, and I'll be finked if I'll be unhappy when I am. Some people just don't think things out." At that moment, there was a querulous shout from Mrs. Plummer.
"What? What was that?"
Harriet looked through her peephole and saw both faces staring right at her. Her mouth opened in speechless terror. They had seen her. She felt everything stop as in a photograph.
"There's nothing, ma'am."
But of course they couldn't have seen her. They couldn't see through walls.